going on, Internet? I'm Christopher Peterson. You're listening to a Nerd EXP Cinecast. This week I'm hanging out with Edgar.
Hi, good to be back.
Guillermo.
I am here.
Andrew.
Hello.
If this is your first episode, you're in for a treat. If you're a returning listener, thanks for waiting. Each time we gather, we talk about movies. One movie in particular drew us all back into the podcast life. Talking about Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
I thought we were talking about Return of the Jedi. You told me about... What is this, cheating?
They're practically the same movie.
Oh.
That's the one it's not like.
I know. That's right.
Spoiler, sorry.
Come on, Drew.
You know, in all honesty, I recommend everybody go see this movie immediately if you haven't seen this. I think that what we're going to discuss... We'll try and be spoiler-free at the first couple of minutes, but really, this podcast is meant to be in your back pocket for after you've seen the movie and then want to hear some of your own thoughts echoed, send us questions, and just kind of hear what we have to say about it.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think one of the, like we all talked about it at the beginning, this kind of drew us back together because it's kind of one of these movies that you have a reaction to it and you want to talk about it. So that's, I think, one of the best things that this movie does and did so well, and why really anyone, whether you're related to Star Wars or not, should definitely go see it. I think it stands on its own, but it's definitely more appreciated, even if you are a lover of the Star Wars.
Yeah, it feels like we all found pieces of the puzzle, pieces of the map, and we all found each other. That's how great this is.
It's also really, it was a good feeling, like a good culmination endpoint, to be back, reintroduce myself into the, you know, geek news world. As after September 4th, I really held my own and stayed away from old spoilers, news articles, new TV spots. The only things that I did watch was new trailer and the international version of the trailer. And that was it. I know there was majority of TV spots, all this other media stuff. I managed to stay away. And for once, it was so great to have this movie, just enjoy the movie from beginning to end, not knowing that what exactly was going to happen. So that was excellent.
Yeah, I saw it on Friday, the first showing in the morning, so I did miss that Thursday wave. But I went back online immediately after watching the film. I took a one-week hiatus from all social media, all news sites. Once I saw the fact that people were seeing early screenings in Hollywood that Monday, I was like, you know what? Too much information's out there. Too many people have seen it. I need to stay away from the internet. But, you know, today's Tuesday when I'm recording. So, you know, I saw the movie about 5 days ago. I haven't seen a spoiler, in all honesty, in social media or news sites or anything. People have been pretty, for the internet, pretty respectful.
I think so, too. But definitely, if you just happen to be, you know, curious about certain characters, you're going to find it. Like, it's top headline of it. So, if you just Google characters out of curiosity, you will get spoilers.
So, Drew, what are your thoughts on the movie, just kind of overall?
Overall, I loved it. I loved the experience. I loved the wait. I loved the final product. A couple nitpicks, nothing more than nitpicks. I definitely recommend that if you haven't seen it, you need to turn us off and go. It's playing probably in 10 minutes or in 30 minutes or in 50 minutes. So
how many times have you guys seen it now?
Two times for me.
And both? Chris?
Just once.
Okay, what format did you guys see the movie?
I saw it in 3D.
Like IMAX 3D or just plain 3D?
Just plain 3D. Cinemark XD 3D.
Oh, wow.
XDRPX. I saw it in Bobo. I don't know if that's a term.
Come on, Bobo. You just saw it in digital projection.
Yeah.
non-3D.
Non-3D.
Which was not Bobo.
I know, I'm just joking.
So just to bring it into perspective, Drew, Edgar, and myself, we all saw it together. So we got to experience that. We were part of the, what do they call it? The
opening night.
Opening night event at Walt Disney World, which included, you got to see the movie earlier than midnight shows on Thursday. So our particular showtime was at 7:50. And right after that, we got to go to Hollywood Studios to attend I guess it was 4 hours of Star Wars related activities in the park. So that's a little bit of perspective. So being part of that experience and then sharing that after that, I think it definitely helped with my reaction. Initially, when I watched this movie, and Drew and Edgar can be witnesses to this, I was confused, angry, and didn't really know what to think of this movie. And I've heard and talked to a lot of people who have seen it, and it's been a while since a movie just kind of made me just keep to myself. It had such an impact on me. Well, Crystal, exactly. That's exactly it, Drew. Since Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and the biggest deception that was, I didn't really know what to quite make of this. Like it's over, it happened, now what?
That these two movies are comparable in any way.
Absolutely not. You're right. No. But similar reaction, so I was surprised to see that.
Yeah, I think kid gloves are off from here on out. Let's stop beating around the bush. Let's dive head first into all spoilers. So again, if you haven't seen this movie, which judging from the box office numbers, everybody's already seen it.
That's right.
Excellent.
Full spoilers ahead. I love this film. I don't know exactly if we want to do this chronological order or what, but my initial reaction, and maybe this will be a huge debate, is that this movie is actually better than every Star Wars movie that came before it. Hold on before you start yelling at me. It is it is acted better.
It's a trap.
It has the story's just like New Hope, so whatever. I mean, those are very similar. But the characters are more likable than, you know, Han, Luke, and Leia. The difference is this is one movie that we saw a week ago, as opposed to the original trilogy, which is actually three movies, which we've been loving for 30 years. I think this film was perfect and was everything that fans could have wanted and needed from the franchise going forward.
Wow. Glowing review from Chris Peterson.
Wow. I mean, does anybody have any negative review?
Well, hang on. Before I went to go see this movie, like, I also stayed away from any spoilers, and for once in my life, like, I felt surprised. Like, I didn't know it was coming around the corner.
Well, wait a second.
Edgar's the one of us that usually goes out of his way to learn something about a movie.
Right. Right. And up to a certain point, you did. I mean,
yes.
Was anything spoiled for you? I remember a couple of times during our conversations, you looked at something, looked at an article, and said, stay away from here.
It was more background, like learning that Kylo Ren, like the Knights of Ren.
Yeah.
And like the international trailer had like a little bit more sequences with like what was it? Like with Phasma, like it was more background stuff, but no way did I know that Han was going to get killed or anything like that. Like no way.
Yeah.
I mean, spoilers while watching the film, and maybe this shouldn't count, maybe this is on me. I don't know if you guys thought about it, but I never lose myself entirely in a movie. So in the opening scene when Finn – well, first, when we meet Poe, I go, hey, he's wearing Finn's jacket. I saw that immediately, and I was like, I bet you he's going to give it to Finn from some circumstances. And then later when Poe was dead, air quote, I was like, no, he's not. He flies an X-Wing over a body of water later. So, I don't know. So even first trailer kind of spoiled part of the own plot synopsis and movie for me. But that was the only thing. Everything else, I honestly thought Finn was going to be the Jedi. Up until the point where Kylo Ren was fighting Finn and Rey, I thought Finn and Rey were going to tag team him. And Finn was going to do the lightsaber action, and maybe she would have, you know, jumped in with a couple force pushes or something. And that's how they were going to defeat him. until that moment where she grabbed the lightsaber, I thought she was going to stay true to her, like, vow of, like, I'm never touching that thing again. So.
I don't think ever once thought that Finn was going to be the Jedi. I thought it was just, they made it too obvious in the marketing, and they were pushing it too hard. At best, I thought maybe, you know, all three of the new cast would be Jedi, but if there was going to be just one, I knew it wouldn't be him.
Yeah, I think I second that. It didn't fit the fact that he was a stormtrooper and that he would be a Jedi. But, you know, I definitely, I guess, didn't want to suspect. But, yeah, the whole Rey deal, I definitely, it was refreshing in a way that you ended up being the Jedi. Or the Force sensitive, because she's not a Jedi.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and there's a lot of great scenes with these characters. I think, you know, Finn and Rey were perfect. And, you know, as much as I might harp on the movie as being very similar to New Hope, these characters, Han, Luke, Leia, are not necessarily, like, repeated in Finn, Rey, Poe. Like, yes, there's aspects of each one of those characters in the new generation, but they're not cookie cutters to where you look at it and go, hey, Rey's the new Han. Like, she's a Han-Luke mix.
Right. Finn's really not anyone, I wouldn't think.
No, he's like the Chewbacca of the trip. He is a funny guy.
Mix, right?
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Oh, I mean, that's another thing. This movie was so surprisingly funny. I know that, you know,
that's really funny.
The original trilogy, people were like, oh, Han Solo, you know, brings charm and levity, air of charisma to the film, which was missing in the prequels. But here, I mean, you had Han come back, who was fucking amazing. Like, this Harrison Ford was nothing like the Harrison Ford in The Unfortunate Crystal Skull. But, I mean, Finn was funny, Rey was funny, BB-8 was funnier than R2 ever was. Even the Stormtroopers, like, had some funny physical moments. Like, this was an enjoyable movie, even during its, like, darkest hours.
Real quick, I know that we mentioned that some actors, like, even though they're in big movies, some actors don't show up. Like, we talked about in different scenarios where the director is the big producer of these things. And I feel like J.J. Abrams really got the best out of everyone. And that's why this movie is so great. He got the best out of Carrie Fisher. He got the best out of John Boyega. He got the best out of Harrison Ford. Like, who knew that he could still be this badass? So I think this is,
second that.
This is all J.J. Abrams, like, making the fun again, making a movie about Star Wars. Like, he squeezed every little bit of juice out of these characters, and it's great. Like, I want Mo Poe.
I agree. So I guess, what was your favorite character introduction? Well, I mean, every character had an introduction, which was the best part about it.
Sorry, it's not a character, but when they were running away from the TIE fighters, and Rey was like, listen, we got to get on that quad jumper, and then, like, the TIE fighter blows it up. She's like, oh, man, oh, that's left, that's that piece of garbage. And then they show the piece of garbage, and it's the Millennium Falcon.
That was epic.
Like, that was the best introduction.
I got goosebumps just talking about this again. But every time I see that scene, it's like, wow. It's like one of those scenes that just makes you get up and jump out of your seat. Like, yeah, you know, both times I've seen it, people have cheered for that scene.
I think that particular moment was predictable, but it still was perfect. And I think there's a lot about this movie was so predictable, but so perfectly executed that it didn't matter whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Han and Chewie had the Falcon. I will say, the second they said that ship's a piece of garbage before they panned to it, because they said that, and they're like, never mind, go to the garbage. When they said that line, I was like, oh, that's the Millennium Falcon, and they're going to be there in 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the funny thing is, when they run by it heading towards the quad, like, you see it's obviously the Millennium Falcon. Like, you see it, in, you know, as they walk by it first. So it was pretty cool that people didn't notice it, I guess. But, of course, you know, after you watch it again, you'll see it. It was obvious it was the Millennium Falcon. We just missed it.
Your question about character introductions, I think Edgar had the best answer. I would honestly say none of the characters were introduced well. I definitely love this movie, but I think, you know, I guess Ray's character was introduced the best. But, I mean, you know, they were just kind of there until they started interacting, and really until they started interacting with each other. Like, Finn by himself is just, you know, like, hey, I'm a stormtrooper. I don't really want to be a stormtrooper. Oh, well. But it's when he starts talking to Poe that he really comes to light, and especially when he starts talking to Rey. And Rey is very much the same way. When she's by herself collecting salvage, whatever, she's, you know, she almost feels like Anakin working as a slave again. And I know she's not, and that's the only time I would ever say anything remotely like that.
Her introduction reminded me of the beginning of WALL-E, where WALL-E's riding around collecting garbage and not talking.
Yeah. I mean, it's only when she meets BB-8 that she starts to have a personality. And I think right. You need those interactions between these principal cast members to really bring light to them. I mean, one nitpick would be Poe and Finn became friends way too fast. But maybe you could say the same about Han and Luke.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, they almost died together. I think that's – I heard a lot of that criticism, like those two characters all of a sudden are bros, but – they fought together and almost died together. So, and they both thought that each other had died. So that's, I think, the bond that you see in it. But I agree. I agree. It was, you know, glad. I'm glad. It's one of those friendships that I can't wait to see more of.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it was great. And I think once you throw that aside, it's fantastic. I will say, though, Finn had the goofiest scene as far as I was concerned. When you see Poe, like, just destroying through TIE fighters and Finn's on the ground, he's like, who's that amazing pilot?
Yeah. That is the best pilot. Which, by far, that was an epic scene. Just finally seeing, you know, when you hear about, oh, he's the best X-Wing fighter, you know, in the original Star Wars, you hear about, you know, Antilles is the best pilot, Luke Skywalker is the best pilot. But all you see them is do normal things. And then here comes Poe Dameron, and it's just killing TIE fighters or exploding TIE fighters, killing stormtroopers just from the X-Wing, and it is amazing. That sequence was just epic for me. So definitely Finn's reaction was just excellent and just kind of ratified the fact that we just saw one of the best X-Wing, you know, X-Wings.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Did the opening scroll fake you guys out? When it said Leia sends her best pilot, I was like, oh, Han, it's going to open with Han. It's like, oh, I guess Han's not her best pilot.
No, that didn't fake me out because of Star Wars Celebration.
I agree.
That was like one of the three reveals they mentioned in that Force Awakens panel was that the whole movie begins with Leia sending Poe on a mission.
Gotcha.
So like at least Guillermo and I, we knew going in. That, I mean, of the four of us, obviously there were more than just Guillermo and I at Star Wars Celebration, but yeah, like, we knew going in that there was that.
And also based on the comics, there was, you know, there was some mention of, you know, being the Dameron family strong pilots, strong fighters, so it didn't surprise me. One thing, though, I mean, I haven't revisited, or, you know, all the scrolls, opening scrolls from the previous movies, but this one just seemed like somebody wrote it in a rush. Like, there was no, it wasn't poetic, it wasn't, it just kind of was like, here's fragment one, fragment two, fragment three, movie starts. Like, it felt so quick.
They're all like that. I saw, yeah, I rewatched the films before watching this. They're all very choppy.
Okay.
This one seemed a little, maybe a slightly more simple. But yeah, it's not, there's not too much of a difference.
But even like the opening shot of a Star Destroyer, it's fun. That shot is symbolic of this entire movie because it opens with the Star Destroyer. And all the shots, you know, are all the movies open with space shots. And then, you know, that shot is famous in the films of panning the camera sideways as you see the Star Destroyer. But this does it from underneath. And I think that speaks to exactly what J.J. did throughout this entire film, was, what do you know about Star Wars? I'm going to give it to you, but slightly different than exactly how it was done before. And I think that's one reason why this film works. Because it needed to reinstill people's confidence. People were so pissed off and burnt out from the prequels that they needed to reestablish that, hey, this is Star Wars. And they gave a Star Wars movie. I mean, we don't necessarily have to go through all the plot beats, but like Poe is like Leia, gives information to a droid, and then sends it out, and that droid needs to go back to him. And then, you know, I mean, all the characters are analogous to who they were before. Han's the new Obi-Wan, Luke's the new Yoda, you know, and then like Ren's obviously Vader, but he's almost the anti-Vader. Like Vader is stoic and control and just sits there with no emotion on his face throughout the entire trilogy, even when he kills the Emperor and dies. He doesn't give a shit about anything. But Kylo is like, you know, getting pissed about everything. And his emotion, and is raw. And then you can say that's because he's not trained and stuff. But I think that's, you know, exactly what they did. They gave you what you knew and what you expected, which is a slight twist.
He's what Anakin should have been.
He was so Anakin. Like, yes, I 100% agree with you. He felt like Anakin pre-Vader.
Going back, good acting. Jumping back real quick to the character introductions, I was going to say my favorite was Kylo Ren, which I don't think anyone was necessarily thinking of because we were thinking about heroes, but Kylo Ren, I think, had a very strong introduction walking off of his shuttle and going up to the old man and having his little encounter with him. I love that.
And stopping the bolt in midair. Like, yes. That was so awesome.
That was
like, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. Why hasn't anyone done that before?
And did you guys catch it that at the end of that sequence when he leaves, then the shot actually hit something?
Yeah, he lets go.
That was so cool.
So you read a lot of the more extended material, Guillermo. Quick, real briefly, who the fuck is that old guy who's like an old advisor and one of Leia's allies?
That's exactly who he is, and that's all the backstory that we get on the books, on the new visual encyclopedia for The Force Awakens. They say that he's an old, I guess, they talk about that he was a political ally of Leia. A little bit of backstory, I guess, of what happened in between Jedi and Force Awakens. You know, definitely the New Republic is born, and they create a new Senate, a Republic Senate. The first one was led by Mon Mothma. And the things that we learn about that in the, I guess, the comics and in between books and whatnot is that they elect a Senate and they move it around. They not only vote on their leader, but they also vote on the venue of where they're going to hold their Senate meetings.
Oh.
So that kind of like, you know, later on, if you didn't know that, you think like, was that Coruscant that just got destroyed? It was not. It is not. It is whichever system. But it was where the Senate was currently being held, I guess. But I guess to go backstory,
it's fine.
it's one of the story. But going through where your guy is, I guess when Leia ends up getting kind of exiled out of the government, and then she requests the whole creation of the resistance, so she can keep an eye on the growing of the First Order, and he was one of the big supporters that she had, you know, political ally to get that going. So that's the only backstory that in the Star Wars universe has been revealed, is that this guy was just a political ally of Leia helping her getting the resistance.
So, just a quick question. Is the resistance like the Marines of the Republic?
They're the new rebels.
Oh, okay. So the resistance is like the military arm, though. The military wing.
No. The New Republic also had its own army. Oh. But the resistance was just kind of this other group that, I guess, the police, like kind of the UN. Think of that.
Oh, okay.
There were the UN forces. They were just keeping an eye on the First Order.
Gotcha. Force for change.
So you bring up the I what's the new Death Star called?
Starkiller Base.
I groaned. I don't know if anybody heard me, but I groaned when that thing shot its sunbeam and killed like eight planets or whatever. I mean, talk about like an escalation. And I still love the movie, but like, you know, when that scene happened, I was like, oh, you know, before we had a giant thing that could kill one planet. Now we have a giant thing that can kill a million planets. Ha ha ha.
Giant-er thing.
So I don't know. Like I touched upon before, the retreading of plot was really disappointing. Even at one point when they talked about the base having a weakness and they were going to disable it, I thought they were just going to disable it. I didn't realize that them disabling it meant that it was going to blow up completely and be a big spectacle. Which I should have. I should have known.
I felt the same way, and everyone I've listened to talk about that has also felt the same way, that they didn't think it was going to be blown up. They thought it was going to carry over.
But you got it. So, you know, we talk about the recycling of the things, but then they also added a little thing. You know, it's like, this is a, I mean, you got to put it into perspective of J.J. Abrams. Here's a fanboy who probably had this movie in his head for a while. And, you know, how can you make the Death Star better? Well, make it a whole planet. And I thought that aspect was very cool, you know, and refreshing, new. The fact that now this thing is a planet as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was still great. It was still great to see them fly. one thing that I thought was really funny was the X-Wing pilots. They even had a new Porkins. They had a new fat X-Wing pilot
to carry. Slightly overweight. I don't think he was quite a Porkins.
He won't have a name like Porkins.
So I thought that was great. So many great scenes. I feel like I've dominated a lot of the conversation. Is there anything that you guys want to call out, like just kind of roundtable that we haven't touched upon yet?
I loved Finn. Like, I thought he was a very charismatic and magnetic character. I loved how, like, he said, droid, please, right? That was real funny. And how he told Han that he was a big deal, and then Han calls him a big deal and all that stuff. I liked his interactions with Han a lot. I also liked when Han was like, yeah, women find out the truth, or, you know. And he's like, they always find out. And that was cool, because, I mean, that's relatable to everyone. It's just not, you know, galaxy far, far away. Like, that's relatable.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and even him calling out Han Solo instead, and he's like, Solo?
You just call me Solo?
No, and definitely great.
Chewbacca. I mean, this is Chewbacca's best movie ever. The character was giving chances to interact. His reactions to everything that Han was saying was epic. Plus, eventually we're going to get there. The final scene that we see Chewbacca, you know, just take the bowcaster and shoot Kylo Ren. That was just so badass. And the fact that he just shoots him, and then he goes and shoots everybody else. That was epic, Chewbacca.
It reminded me of Han shooting Vader in Thespin. Like, just, you know, just reacting, not giving a fuck about the situation anymore.
I love how Chewie perked up when Finn accidentally turned on the holochess game, too.
Yeah. My favorite Chewie scene was when he and Han first meet Finn and Rey, and, you know, Finn goes, the war hero? And Rey goes, no, the smuggler. And Chewbacca's like, like, no, maybe yes, maybe no.
Yeah.
What about you, Drew?
What are we talking about? What we like the most? Or what?
Just something that we haven't called out yet.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're kind of avoiding the very end for right now, but going back to the X-Wing on Maz's palace, like that, when the First Order is attacking and then the Resistance first shows up, I think that's maybe my favorite, or at least top three moments of the movie, when everyone looks over out onto the water and you see all the X-Wings coming in, and they have, you know, the water spraying up from their jets behind them, and the music kind of slightly picks up. You get a little bit of a march going there. It's like the cavalry coming in. It's great. I definitely got the most goosebumps from that, I think.
Definitely a great scene.
One thing, like, I guess maybe we could talk about kind of unanswered questions, maybe not necessarily just questions, just things left kind of vague, like I want to know more about what happened with Maz after that attack, Maz Kanata, and Supreme Leader Snoke. We haven't touched on him. I think the two motion capture characters are kind of vague, and I definitely want to know more about them.
Yeah, and then as we, I guess we, Drew, you kind of found out, is the, I guess the novelization of The Force Awakens doesn't come out until January. But right. A lot of people who have been reading it, I guess media people have it already. They said that that answers a lot of questions, including what we saw in the second trailer, which was Maz Kanata saying, you know, whatever that, you know, the Force is calling to you, embrace it or whatnot, that whole line. And then we see her handing the lightsaber to Leia. Like all that, apparently it's part of the story, and it's in the third act at the end, where when Rey gets back to the base, all that supposedly happens. So it just got cut. I think that's one of the things that I kind of, you know, a lot of people have questions, and I know in due time they'll give us the answers to these questions, whether it's going to be in the next movie or the next comic book or the next book or the next TV show. Like, they're going to give us answers, but I do feel like a lot of things did get cut out of this film. You know, like, you know, one of the things that the second time I watched it, you know, in the scene with Kylo Ren in the snow, you see that Rey and Finn, you know, leave the, you know, when Chewbacca blows up the whole thing, they leave, and then all of a sudden they're out in the forest, like way, way far away from the blast. So you're like, how the heck did they get there so quickly? There's a picture of, in the visual encyclopedia, of Rey riding like the snow speeder away from that place. So again, this is just all things that I think were shot, but were cut for time. So I think they decided that those answers were just better left unsaid, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're extremely needed. Snoke especially, we'll find out more later. Like, we didn't know anything about the Emperor. We didn't even see the Emperor in New Hope. And that's where we are. We're in the first installment of a new saga, which is going, like Guillermo said, going to have books and video games and TV shows and tie-ins and Wikipedia entries upon Wikipedia entries.
And holiday specials.
So, I mean, we're just seeing the first building blocks of that. One thing that I know that we're going to get, and I think Guillermo has a theory, but man, I know there were some flashbacks of Rey being abandoned on Jakku. I really hope that that's the end of the story, that her parents were just dicks and they abandoned her. I do not want her to be Luke's daughter, that he somehow, like, force mind wiped and he sent her on a desert planet to protect her because Kylo Ren killed all the other apprentices. I really hope that she doesn't have any, like, special weird connection. Somebody in the universe, besides a Skywalker, can fucking be a Jedi. Like, we don't need that entire family being the only ones capable of using the Force.
Well, I do believe that she's Luke's daughter, and, like, Luke had to put her in exile.
Go ahead.
I feel like it's either... like, it's either his daughter or maybe one of his Jedi students' daughters or something like that, you know? Like, maybe, like, it was his best friend's daughter that he had to hide or something like that. Because, I mean, who would drop off a kid on a salvaged desert island, you know?
I assume they sold her. They got so many, like... I mean, I guess she wasn't a slave, per se, but I don't know. I mean, I know you're going to be right, but, like... I already am kind of upset with how they treated Luke, and I understand Kylo Ren killed off all his students, he's upset, he's sad, he's the new Yoda, he's in hiding. But I mean, if Luke is as powerful as everybody's freaking out about, you know, Finn, a fucking janitor, knows that a map to Skywalker is a big deal, and Snoke doesn't want anybody to find Skywalker. If Luke's really as big of a deal, it almost makes it sound like he could have stopped some of this stuff from happening. And he just sat on his island and just sat there meditating, and he kind of let the First Order destroy all those planets then.
Well, I think he goes away because of, you know, destroying him is just kind of destroying that last hope. So he was just kind of like, he went into exile, I think, to, you know, find the, I mean, he goes into exile to find the first Jedi temple. So he was trying to protect the Jedi. Again, that's why I think he goes into hiding, to just protect the Jedi religion and artifacts away from the new rise of the dark side. So I think he did it on that purpose, just to protect and wait for the next wave of Jedis. Now, as far as, you know, Rey's beginning, I'm with you, Chris. I hope she's not a Skywalker. I really hope so. I want to see somebody else. You know, there's lots of rumors out there, and I have my own theories. Some theories are saying that she's a Kenobi, like some kind of relation to old Ben. So, yeah, that could be feasible. They would have to explain a lot. But my theory is that she's actually a Dameron. We never see Poe or her be in one scene together. So one of the quick things is, if you read the comic books in Shattered Empire, they introduce Poe Dameron's as parents. And in the last book, Poe Dameron's mother goes with Luke on a mission to try to rescue the last trees that were part of the Jedi Temple in Coruscant. And they find that there's two trees. Luke Skywalker takes one because he wants to start his own temple, and he's going to have his own tree of the forest. And then he gives the other one to Poe Dameron's parents, and they go and plant it into their own home planet. In the opening sequence with Rey's introduction, when we get to see her inside the AT-AT that she lives in, which I thought was brilliant, we do get to see some kind of tree that looks mostly like a dead tree, except for one branch that seems to be just like a blooming flower that just started blooming, which kind of gives a little bit imagery of, you know, like the Force just awakened, just like that plant did. So that's the connection that I see, that, you know, the next movie, they're definitely going to reveal to us that Poe Dameron is the older brother of Rey. And just by proximity of this, you know, Force tree, that's how she's Force sensitive. My theory.
No, I mean, you could be right, because when Kylo Ren learns that Finn and BB-8 teamed up with a girl, like, he freaks out.
He does. That was one thing I think was very intentional, and intentionally left a little vague, was his quick reaction to that, and then the quick cut away.
And also the the first interaction between Poe Dameron and Kylo Ren, like, you know, do I talk first? Do you talk first? Which, again, super funny. Just kind of gives a hint that there was a relationship between Ben and Poe. Maybe they were childhood friends, and, you know, this was kind of like, there's no, like, there was a familiarity already there. And it's totally feasible that the Damerons and Poe, so, like, you know, maybe the Damerons during the Rise of the First Order get killed, and now there's two orphans. One of the orphans, Leia and Han Solo, take with them, which is how Poe Dameron becomes, you know, Leia's most trusted pilot. And then Luke kind of gets entrusted with Rey as a young kid, but he has to abandon her when he has to flee. So I think that would be a great, 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 great story of reintroducing a new family and giving importance to all these comic books and books that they've written on the side, just giving importance to that.
The only funny thing about that is, and it'd be funny, it'd be so true, in keeping with this first movie, if you're right, is the fact that a hidden brother and sister were split up, and the one that becomes Force sensitive lives on a desert planet, while the other one's given to a royal family. Like, I mean, they are plagiarized. I mean, like, maybe you're right, and I would prefer that to her being a Skywalker, but they're plagiarizing themselves in that theory again.
I think so, and we don't find out about it until the second movie. I mean,
maybe. Kylo Ren.
Almost, Oh, go ahead, real quick, I almost think it might be possible that J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan, when writing The Force Awakens, didn't make a decision on where Rey is from, and they could possibly be leaving it to the next writers that are taking on these movies to kind of fill that in.
That's pretty clever, but knowing how, like, there's the story group of Lucasfilm, it's just those four key players.
Right.
I think they hold the keys. It's not the directors. It's those people know the story of where they want to take it.
Let me just make a quick point. Is that when Kylo Ren was interrogating Rey, like, he sees in her mind of her thinking about an island in the ocean. So that's how I think those two are linked together, like Luke and Rey, is that Luke was on that island and Rey, like, imagined it or force visioned it. So I think those two are connected somehow. I like the Dameron angle, but I think they're going to make it real easy.
I think it's very possible that Luke may have been kind of pulling some strings from behind the scenes in all of this too, especially following Rey, kind of keeping an eye on her. Maybe not to suggest any connection, any family connection, just, you know, he knew she was force sensitive.
All right, so here's my theory on
Luke. Because Maz Kanata tells her, you know, Luke could come for you. Like, your family won't come for you, but Luke can.
So. Here's my theory on Luke. I mean, we definitely see in the map, if you guys saw the map, there's a bunch of stops that he made along the way, right? The people, or one of the people who are given importance and probably we'll see again, is this Maz Kanata character. So my theory about Luke is that Luke and Maz Kanata partner up to kind of smuggle all these kids or survivors of the Jedi Temple massacre to different places. And that's the whole way that we see Luke kind of jump from planet to planet to planet, dropping all these Force-sensitive kids. And if they play that angle, I mean, I can just only imagine Episode 9 just having a full-on Jedi against Knights of Ren battle. And I really do hope that they go that route where there's multiple Jedis against multiple Sith or
That's happened before, man. That's happened in Attack of the Clones, and that sucked.
And no, absolutely no.
There was only one Sith in Attack of the Clones.
No. Like all the Jedis fighting against, like, robots and the
battle. But we never seen this, you know, Jedi lightsaber against lightsaber, man. That would be an epic scene, like one of those that you always remember. Just a sword fight, like a gigantic sword fight between characters that, you know, that hopefully we'll find out more about.
Lightsaber battles, to switch topics, and I agree with everything you said, Guillermo. Well, to an extent, like, I think that just the idea of Luke abandoning the kids instead of just taking them with him on his super secret, I'm going to hang out on an island for 30 years, or whatever, 10 years, and train. If nobody knew where he was, he could have just trained with the kids. He didn't have to, like, hide them and scatter them across the galaxy.
Maybe he thought, you know, I was abandoned on a desert planet and I turned out.
Yes. Lightsaber battles. Return to form. Broadsword combat. No, I didn't see a single flip. And it looked fine. It didn't look slow or methodical. Like, it looked like it made sense. And I was really surprised that Kylo Ren made use of the funky hilt blade.
Well, they definitely needed that.
But so that way it wasn't just visual.
It was great, yeah.
And another great visual cue of, like, you know, we touched on how, you know, Kylo Ren's personality was kind of, you know, he was, you know, he had a temper. He was sloppy in the Force. I mean, that's the best way to see it. And you notice, like, the beam of his lightsaber, it's not like a perfect, glow. It's, like, sketchy, you know, kind of, you know, there's wiggle lines all throughout the aura of his lightsaber. So I thought that was excellent play.
Even the sound it made was not perfect.
Exactly. And then the whole fact that, you know, again, I keep wrestling this visual encyclopedia because I went looking for answers right after this movie ended. And one of the things they revealed is that inside the hilt of his lightsaber, it's actually, he had to build this lightsaber And as compared to all the other lightsabers that have like an actual crystal, this one, his has a cracked crystal inside of it. Mm. So it looks like he just took it from somebody.
That's cool.
So I guess like one of the big scenes that we talked about was the Han death scene. Staying on Kylo Ren, I was shocked when Han called him Ben.
Oh yeah,
I think that was the best reveal in the entire film.
I agree.
And the whole time I was crossing my fingers like, please don't be Anakin, please don't be Anakin,
or Jason, or yeah, whichever other name.
Which I couldn't tell if them calling him Ben was perfect or kind of a slap in the face to all the people who love the old expanded universe. In that realm, the names that Anakin and Jason were the Solo children, and Ben was actually Luke's kid, Skywalker. So, and obviously Ben named after Ben Kenobi. But it just seemed kind of odd because Leia never met Ben. I mean, I guess Han did, before they stormed the Death Star, but I don't know. I always associate, like, it made sense in the expanded universe. Luke names his kid Ben. Luke had an affection for Ben. I wouldn't know if Leia and Han would have that same connection. I mean, obviously they did, but...
But you got to put it in this...
Leia kind of never met Anakin either.
Yeah.
But then you got to put it into this way too, though. If you really go rewatch the movies, the one character that glued the whole universe together and that brought Leia and Luke and Han Solo together was Ben.
R2-D2. Oh, damn.
Was Ben. That's his Obi-Wan. Name. So it was Obi-Wan. So... Yeah, right. If Han Solo is, in honor of, whoever led to meet his love of his life, that's kind of how I understood that. That makes perfect sense. That was the guy that brought Luke Skywalker and, changed his life.
So the death scene, when Kylo kills Han.
Toughest moments. I mean, I had a hat, and as soon as that scene happened, I seriously gripped onto my hat, and I was like, I could not believe that this was happening. Not retrospectively, like, there's plenty of clues so that this was going to happen, but man, was it probably the toughest scene that I have ever seen in a movie.
So I guess first thing, when Kylo kills him, when the sun goes out, so melodramatic. The light literally dies. in Kylo himself, just as it dies in the world around him.
That was perfect.
But did you think for a second that Kylo wouldn't kill him?
I thought so. I thought so, that there could be a chance that somebody else was going to die. They were trying to save Han from getting killed. But yeah, I did think that Kylo Ren was just kind of flip sides for a second and then betray them later. But I was hoping for that at least.
I thought it was a possibility. Never was convinced that it was going to happen. But yeah. I think it wouldn't have played out as well, to be honest.
And then, I don't actually believe this, but do you think there's any chance that Han is actually alive? Like, he's pulling a Gandalf? Like,
he gets stabbed. No way.
No way. Han is dead. Han is dead.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, I don't think Star Wars would ever do that. Harrison Ford is finished with Star Wars. He came back and went out on top. Now, his death, I mean, it was beautiful. It was, it was great. But man, that did not do justice to the great character that he was. He should have had a greater death, in my opinion. The fact that he falls down the endless pit. He has no burial, no one remembers him as here's General Solo's funeral. That's where I had a problem, and that's out of that scene. Like, I walked out of the theater angry. Like, I was angry. I'm like, and I can attest to that. Yes. I mean, the guys, everybody was like, what's wrong, man? I'm like, let's go. Let's go. I was so emotionally hard, It was so emotionally hard. And then one of the things, it's like, you know, why did they have to do it? I mean, I get it. They want to, you know, they wanted to eliminate one of the characters, make it mean something. But I'm like, why Han Solo? So to this day, I still struggle with it. Just knowing that this movie was so great and that there's going to be more. But unfortunately, I'm not going to get any more Han Solo, Harrison Ford Han Solo.
I read an interview with J.J. Abrams today, or a little snippet from his interview, and he mentioned, like, from a writing standpoint, what one thing they had to do with Kylo Ren to make him more formidable than Darth Vader was to have him kill somebody really important.
And they did a hell of a job.
They chose Han Solo.
They did a hell of a job. I agree. I mean, I could care less about this Kylo Ren guy. And then he killed freaking Han Solo. And now I hate him. I hope freaking somebody stabs him to death. I hope he gets cut in half and burnt. And gosh, man, I wish the worst for the guy.
I think Guillermo, you might be missing something with Han's death, unfortunately. I think to an extent, only Kylo Ren could have killed Han Solo. That he was scrappy and lucky and can talk his way out of everything. And because it was his son, he let his guard down. So, and he wanted to believe that there was still light in him. Mm-hmm. So that's why he fell.
I agree. I mean, the way they did it was, as I said, beautiful. But man, they could have picked another character. Send Leia and Han Solo to retirement somewhere in Tahiti.
Sure.
Kill Chewbacca. Like, as much as I hate to say it, kill Chewbacca. I would have been okay with that. But
I think they didn't kill Chewbacca because Chewbacca dies in the expanded universe. I think that they are making a conscious decision to do stuff differently.
Chewbacca sells toys.
I like the idea of Chewbacca becoming close with somebody else too, like Rey.
I really like. Sorry, I haven't talked in a little bit. I really liked Kylo Ren. Because he was so conflicted, like he needed a father figure, and unfortunately, like Supreme Leader Snoke was his father figure, and he wanted to like prove himself to Snoke. So, I mean, I love Kylo Ren's character of being frustrated and like taking his lightsaber, which is supposed to be a noble weapon, and like slicing stuff up, and it was so cool. Like I love how conflicted Kylo Ren is.
He has the most potential out of all four of the new main cast to be a really great character.
I know, like especially when Snoke is like, oh, and that's something that was revealed really early too, was when Snoke mentioned that Han Solo, your father, and he's like, Han Solo doesn't mean anything to me. It's like, wow, that's really early. Like, they introduced him as Han Solo's son, like, really early in the movie.
I mean, the opening sequence talks to, you know, like, that they, you know, about the family. And, you know, he had some kind of relation to someone just out of the first scene in the movie.
Does, what's his name, call him Ben at the beginning?
Nobody says it until Han does.
Yep.
Or I think he mentions, like, I know you by another name.
Yeah.
Or I used to know you from another name.
I knew you before you were Kylo Ren. Or before you joined the Knights of Ren or something.
I really appreciate Adam Driver. Like, I think that Adam Driver was an excellent casting choice in this. Because I've only seen him in Girls, and he's excellent in Girls, portraying, like, this broody, awkward character, and he carries that over really well.
I really hope, I agree with Guillermo, I hope Ren dies, Ben dies, whatever, Kylo Ren dies. I do not want another salvation story. Vader got saved by Luke's love and, you know, Luke teaching him that he was good, blah, blah, blah. I do not need to see them save Kylo. I hope that he is an irredeemable character, and he stays a villain until the end of the series.
I hope that now, you know, how Snoke's character, I really do hope that Kylo Ren goes to training, and as soon as he goes to training with Snoke, he kills Snoke. I really hope that happens.
And that'd be interesting. That would definitely like shock
the shit out of people. Because he wants to be most powerful?
That's right, and he actually does it. Just like, you know, Vader almost did it, but this guy will do it.
I mean, it's one the big glaring hole in Kylo Ren's whole worshipping Vader. Does nobody tell him what happened over the Battle of Endor? Do they not, like, mention that Vader technically died a hero? Though I disagree. I think all of his atrocities, all the years, don't wash away just because he killed the Emperor, who he was planning on killing the whole entire time. But in the Star Wars universe, he died a hero. He died saving Luke. He died on the side of light. He becomes a Force ghost, which, the way they present it, only good can become a Force ghost, it sounds like. So it just seems like such a gap in Kylo Ren's knowledge base.
As far as we know, though, from what's on screen, Luke is the only person that knows that. I mean, it makes total sense that he would tell at least Leia, you know, but there's no evidence that he ever told anyone.
That's fair.
That's a good point.
That's definitely fair. So
what do we want to talk about that we didn't like? Is there anything?
Go ahead, Edgar.
When I first got out of the movie theater, Drew and I started talking about parts that we didn't like. And one of the parts that, I don't know if you still find this true, Drew, but when Han and Leia are talking about their failures as parents, and it's like, well, like, he had too much Vader in him, and like, that totally slowed the movie down, like, to a screeching halt. And Han Solo was like, if Luke couldn't do it, how am I going to do it? And she's like, well, Luke's a Jedi and you're his dad, and go save Ben, or like, go save him. Like, all that was kind of contrite, I feel.
I agree. That was my least favorite part of the movie. I think it was the most scripted feeling moment in the entire movie. It was exposition for exposition's sake. And it was, you know, maybe the worst acted out of the entire movie as well. It seemed out of place and not, you know, just stupid.
Yeah, I know Eddie gave props for the whole cast doing a good job. I think Harrison Ford did an excellent job, much better than expected. He was on Solo. No disrespect, Carrie Fisher is not an actress. She hasn't acted in quite some time that I'm aware of. She didn't do a good job. Like, she just was there and she said her lines.
I think her best acted moment did not involve dialogue, and that was when they cut to her after Han's death, and, you know, she was kind of just reacting, and she sat down, and that was the moment finally after Han died that I finally, like, started choking up, was seeing her react. And I think that was definitely very well done. But I do agree with you that she's the weakest of all of them.
Guillermo, anything stick out?
I mean, we kind of touched on it, you know, the fact that it did rely heavily on previous movies for ideas. One of the things that just bothered me, it's again, you know, here we made this killer planet, you know, we're getting ready to organize, and it has the freaking, like, simplest of weaknesses, and they dispatch it in a matter of minutes. That was my only issue, that, again, you know, like, are these guys ever going to learn, like, you know, like, put it somewhere else, like, put, you know, don't expose it. And the fact that, you know, they kind of touch on it, like, you know, we send a, you know, a reconnaissance team out there to just kind of figure out how to, the weaknesses, and, you know, they just come back with, like, a full map of this thing. It's like, and Finn just like, yeah, right there, we know, here's the weakness, I was in sanitation.
That was a great line, and I loved when he admits to Han that he doesn't have a plan, and Han's like, what are we gonna do? He's like, I don't know, use the Force.
That was awesome.
Not how the Force works. I really like going back to the scene with in the Resistance base. Han kind of gives a little joke like, well, how do we blow it up? There's always a way to blow it up, and I think that was kind of the writer's excuse to have a weakness on the Starkiller base almost. I will say that Chris already mentioned this way earlier, that aside from what Edgar mentioned with the Han and Leia conversation, the other thing that bothered me most about the movie was the fact that Starkiller base exploded. and Chris alluded to this earlier, that is the whole time I was thinking they were just going to disable it. And I think they even mention by word that they just plan to disable it. Like they can stop it from firing by blowing up whatever that little building was.
Yeah. Which brings me to a couple of my disappointments. One, Captain Phasma.
Like, yes, I've been waiting for that too. Yeah,
indeed.
What a greatly designed character that did nothing. In fact, if you actually look at it, and of course it's a movie, so it's, you know, it plot over substance. But Captain Phasma goes down like a little bitch. Finn's like, "Oh, let's go find this general that I was scared of at the beginning of the movie, or Captain, and we'll force her to shut down the code." If she never shut down the shields, they never would have destroyed Starkiller Base. She single-handedly cost the First Order that victory, the way they framed it in the film.
Which I think sets up the perfect, like, vendetta kind of plot in the next movie. You know, kind of the Boba Fett of the next couple movies. It's Phasma.
And then, in this you could also, like, say plot. But, you know, Finn doesn't want to kill anybody in the village because it's wrong. And maybe because stormtroopers are lifeless. But then once he decides to leave, he doesn't give a fuck about killing everybody. Like, he kills stormtroopers left and right with reckless abandon.
Yes, and, stabbing them with his new lightsaber.
So, and maybe, you know, I'm... And that's obviously me misinterpreting the signals. It's not that he was refusing to kill. It's he didn't want to kill innocents, and stormtroopers aren't innocent. But it just seems like a slight... For a guy who's running away from violence, he definitely has no problem.
He wasn't affected by having to kill the stormtroopers.
Yeah.
It was an issue.
Because kind of the stormtroopers chose that life.
But they didn't.
The stormtroopers did choose that life to be evil, yes.
They were stolen as babies and brainwashed.
Well right, but they all made that choice to shoot innocent people. I mean, like, that's how I got that. Like, you know, like,
no.
Finn was okay with killing all these people because they made the choice to fight for the First Order.
No, man. Like, sorry, man. I totally disagree with you. Like, Finn mentioned that he was taken off of his planet as a child and brainwashed to, like, and even there's some back chatter between Phasma and, like, General Hux or whatever, that he needs to be reconditioned, or, like, he needs to be, like what's his name? Like Bucky needs to be reconditioned. So I feel like it was all brainwashed. Like, no one really wants to join the First Order, but, like, they're stealing babies, which is terrible.
Side note that all this talk just reminded me of, I think the biggest surprise to me in The Force Awakens was that Finn's name was not his name, and that it was given to him by Poe based off of his ID number. Like, I would never have seen anything like that coming, and I was genuinely shocked. Yeah, in a good way. I thought that was very clever.
So I guess we're coming down to a close.
Favorite Easter eggs? I kind of was curious. What are y'all's Easter eggs? Like, favorite Easter eggs? Because this movie had plenty of them.
I'll start. I mentioned this in our little group chat on our phones. The second time I watched it, I noticed on the Millennium Falcon when Finn activates the holochest game, the two pieces interacting on the table are the same two pieces interacting in A New Hope, but in Force Awakens the tables have turned. Like in A New Hope, the big blue thing was killing the little orange thing, but in The Force Awakens the little orange thing was taking down the blue thing, like, with a staff that he had or something, and you know, it was just the opposite, and I really liked that. I laughed out loud when I noticed that.
This isn't really an Easter egg, because besides that and the ball, I'm sorry if someone was going to say that Luke trained with, I really love the fact that C-3PO's arm is red, and yes, he calls it out, but the fact that they don't dive into it, like,
yeah.
The fact that this movie is what this movie is, and even as ridiculous as the fact that, I forgot her name, but the alien has Luke's saber, Luke's
Mascanada.
Mascanada has Luke's lightsaber, and they ask her, like, how'd you get it? She's like, that doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter for this story. And I love the fact that we don't know every little thing that's happened since Return of the Jedi. And that we'll find that stuff out later.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
That's a good point.
Just real quick, one of my favorite Easter eggs was after the movie. Like I was like, what was Simon Pegg's character? Like, because I remember he mentioned that he was a character, and then I found out that it was the guy that was bartering with Rey. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. I'm like,
the guy who stole the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. Like that, like that's Simon Pegg, and I'm like, oh, that is so cool.
Did you guys catch the, you know, Chris kind of touched base that the C-3PO red arm, like they didn't touch on it. Did you guys notice that the end sequence when he's waving the Millennium Falcon, he has his gold arm back? So he has both gold arms?
No.
No.
Yes. I totally missed that.
Absolutely.
Me neither. I didn't.
Yeah, well, worth a third and second watch, guys. Pay attention.
I was I was crying, Memo. Okay.
So last scene with Luke, there was a second where I thought the movie might end without showing him, where the last scene might be Rey and Chewbacca and R2 going off in search of Luke. And that would kind of be the end of it, kind of like Empire.
To be honest, I would have been happier with that, I think.
I would have too. Luke just standing there in that weird shot, that camera rotated like
the helicopter shot. Times. It so. Actually doesn't even do a full rotation. Like I know the second time going in, it's like a half rotation. And not to defend it, it was still silly, but yeah.
Are you guys for real? That last shot was excellent. Like with the music swelling up and Luke like taking off his hood and the beard and his hair, and he was just so somber, and then Rey like
it was very
crying.
Yeah, it was
we were speaking specifically of the very, very last shot of the helicopter spinning, at least for me. That I think that specifically that one aspect of it was very not Star Wars.
Oh. But God, that was so beautiful. Like that last shot was so perfect. Like I want to see it again, just for that last scene.
I do like by the but maybe about the point when Kylo was fighting Rey and Finn, I was like thinking Luke hasn't shown up yet. If he doesn't show up now, I don't think he should. Like it's just pointless and wasted. And then they did it. So.
And then he doesn't speak.
So yeah, he doesn't even speak.
I was shocked that he doesn't speak because Mark Hamill. I mean, he has kind of high billing for a guy who just stands there for 30 seconds. Well, Guillermo, any thoughts?
They spared no expense.
No, I actually did love this, you know, the fact that we got to see Luke. I mean, I think I would have been like, what the hell, where's Luke? So I honestly love the fact that we got to see at least, even if it's him just looking at the camera. Plus, let's be real. I mean, the reason we see him is because Rey goes looking after him to give him the lightsaber that kind of started everything. If you really think about this is the lightsaber that connects the entire universes, prequels, originals, and now the future. This is the lightsaber, kind of like the ring of Lord of the Rings. Like, this is the, you know, that artifact.
So you guys saw it twice, so please correct me if I'm wrong. Not a single mention or reference or Easter egg to the prequels.
I actually caught one.
They mentioned clones.
Is mentioned in New Hope. I'm not going to count that.
When Maz Kantana is mentioning about the different evils that have risen, she spoke to the Sith. She spoke about the Empire, and then she spoke about the New Order. So that was one that I caught, was that she mentioned just Sith.
The one use of the word Sith was maybe one of the most disappointing aspects of the movie to me. So I really have just never gotten behind that word. The fact that it was never mentioned in the original trilogy.
Sith happens, man. Sith happens.
There's no identification for Dark Jedi. You know, that's just what they were. They were the dark side of the Force.
I think they did it just because, you know, again, let's speculate a little bit. This is going to play a big role into who Snoke is. So I think that's why they reintroduced the word the Sith.
And I think I honestly think Snoke is not going to be Force sensitive. I think he's just some evil motherfucker. But one way to excuse Maz Kanata using the word Sith is that she's really old, you know, and she's been around for a long time. So maybe they'll say the word Sith was used, you know, in prequel era, but just not used, you know, in the modern era, I guess, you know, in the original trilogy era. And Maz Kanata being, you know, 1,000 years old or whatever she's supposed to be, that she would know that word and when most people wouldn't.
Good point.
Does anyone think it's odd that Finn's in a coma? Like, do you think he'll actually spend any time in episode 8 comatose and then come revealed, like, halfway through or episode 9? Like, it just seems like an odd... Like, if he's awake in the first second of episode 8, it seems like an odd decision to put him
It's the Han and Carbonite. It's
I know.
The repetition of Han and Carbonite. I do think he'll be comatose. Maybe not the entire movie, but at least for a small portion.
They had to make sure that he didn't go with Rey. That's how I see that. It's okay. Like they had to make sure that he didn't, because if he would have been okay, he would have jumped on that, you know, Millennium Falcon and just go with Rey. So they had to create some kind of, you know, obstacle for him not to go with her.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Plot over substance. I don't know what word I'm trying to say, but like, get the story where you need to do, as opposed to like what makes the most sense all the time.
Go ahead.
You can go ahead, because what I'm saying isn't related to what we were just talking about.
Okay. Well, neither is mine, but I'll go now. Kylo Ren. So what? You know, during the fight sequence, he keeps like punching himself in the belt or midriff area. What did you guys make out of that, though?
That he's insane.
He's trying to be tough.
I know he's hitting his wound. I don't know if he's just trying to show how strong he is. I don't know. Like,
he looked like an ape.
He's trying to distract himself from the wound, from what's holding him back.
Or maybe
I really like that it added some intensity to him. It did kind of make him look crazy. That was maybe one of my favorite aspects of him.
You know, like the dark side takes from pain and suffering. Maybe he was trying to make himself suffer.
Off of it.
Exactly. Like, that was his source of, like, dark energy, was him hitting him, like a little boost, like a little battery pack for him to get, like, extra angry.
And I think he maybe secretly is excited about his injuries from Finn and Rey. Because, you know, he wanted to be like Vader, and now he's slightly deformed. And I think he'll feed more off of that as well.
I think so too. The fact, here's my thing is, maybe he's already part machine and something machine was malfunctioning and that's why he kept punching it just to make it work. Like, honestly, I think his midriff, just the way that costume got put together, I think his midriff is trying to protect some kind of robotic mechanism that...
Well, the one argument against that, I think, would be that he was bleeding. Like, they show the blood and the snow coming from his wound. And there's not to say, you know, he couldn't be a mix of the two and he wouldn't bleed from
General Grievous,
well,
man.
But yeah. It's not impossible.
I agree with, like, Drew and Edgar. Like, I think it was showing how tough he was in Darkseid, like, drawing on the pain and anger. I will say, though, like, I don't know. While it was happening, I was like, man, they are setting this up perfectly for this sequel, when Rey and Ren face off again, and, you know, because then there'll be a line or something where it's like, well, you only beat me last time, Rey, or you only were able to escape because Chewbacca shot me first and I fought Finn first, but now it's just you and I. Like, so they did, like, set it up so that way he was slightly handicapped in that battle.
When I left you, I was but the learner.
How about the observation art? Introduction of the stormtroopers at the beginning. The first thing they do, they definitely do not miss. I thought that was like, all right, this is a new breed of stormtroopers. Later on in the movie, they become the worst aim, especially when they're shooting at main characters.
Yeah, they only miss when they shoot at the main characters.
Yeah, and then the other thing to note is, you know, Chewbacca. So after the scene, you know, Han Solo dies. I think Chewbacca chooses, just based on the familiarity of Ben Solo, he couldn't bring himself to actually shoot him in the head. Because we definitely see that Chewbacca had perfect aim, killing every single other stormtrooper that got in his way. So I think that
was also emotionally affected by Han's death. He may have not been thinking too much into it. He just
point
and shoot.
I think he just wounded him. It wasn't immediate that he shot. So he definitely took aim, and I think he shot him just in the right place, you know, just because he didn't want to kill him.
I disagree. I think he was not thinking straight. And to point out that his scream when Han is stabbed was also one of the most gut-wrenching moments of the movie for me. I thought that was very excellent, very well executed.
I agree.
The stormtroopers looked formidable, but you're right. After that first scene, they fell apart. And the stupidest stormtrooper in the entire movie is the one who has a gun pointing at Finn and says, "Traitor," and then drops his weapons to get the weird melee baton to fight Finn hand-to-hand.
They needed to establish some kind of storyline of why Finn can fight.
Yeah, I know.
Which I thought this was kind of a wasted opportunity. The fact that should have been Phasma. Shows up and freaking brings out that her weapon is the one that becomes a baton.
Yeah. Anything else? I mean, I feel like
one
going through a lot of the film.
One quick thing I've been meaning to bring up a couple times throughout our conversation is it's very minor. Just I really like the aspect of non-force sensitive people knowing and talking about the Force, specifically Maz Kanata, or most prominently Maz Kanata. But also there's a brief moment in the beginning with Max von Sydow's character where he talks about it. And, we don't know for sure whether or not he's Force sensitive, but I get the vibe that he's not. And what Guillermo can tell from the expanded universe, he's just, you know, a Republic ally of Leia. And I also got the vibe that Snoke is not Force sensitive. And he's kind of manipulating Force sensitive people, Kylo Ren specifically. And I can't really explain it, but I really like that.
I think this is going to be the Wizard of Oz reveal when we find out who Snoke is. And we are actually going to see Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis in makeup. I do think it's a possibility because I think they could leave it up to, the director's choice, Rian Johnson or Colin Trevorrow, whichever, to do motion capture or not. I think Andy Serkis would probably fight against it because he loves motion capture. But I do think from what we can see of Snoke, it was kind of unnecessary for motion capture. It definitely could have been successful with just makeup and prosthetic. I wasn't necessarily disappointed by it, and I'm fine with him being motion capture. But like with Maz Kanata, it's kind of necessary. She could have been a puppet as well, but motion capture worked for her. I need to see more of Snoke before I decide necessarily whether he requires it or not.
Maz Kanata was great. Great character. Her in the glasses and calling Finn out on his bullshit and, kind of pushing them along was fantastic. Mm-hmm.
One thing about Maz, I think, that was missing, that, we could still see more of eventually, but like the fact that she runs this palace with, I'm assuming, smugglers and criminals, like we never really get to see a tough side of her. I think she definitely would require that in order to be who she is or who she's alluded to be in the fact that she's running that palace.
Wait till you see Star Wars Anthology Han Solo.
Right. Or Yoda.
Aw, two little midgets.
Yeah. And I really thought it was funny that she, and she might have been just joking, but, had a crush on Chewbacca. She's like, "I love that Wookiee," or something,
That was excellent. That was so funny.
Oh, that was cool.
Anything else from you guys' side?
I can't wait for next year to get Rogue One, because that opening sequence of just stormtroopers and that war setting, that was so excellent. I cannot wait for Rogue One. And they just knocked it out of the park. Exceeded every single expectation and more. of anything I could have wished. This was the first time that we, as a generation, our generation, got to experience Star Wars without knowing what was going to happen. So we got to be, you know, from the get-go, kind of experience what the people from 1977 experienced. So, man, I can't wait to be, you know, see more from this universe. They're doing it right.
All right. Well, thank you, Edgar.
You're welcome. Happy to be back.
You got it. This is a good episode.
Thank you, Drew.
Anytime.
And thank you out there for listening. I hope that you enjoyed this episode and that we were able to help you with your Star Wars IQ. Definitely check us out. Leave comments wherever you're listening to this. Rate, set us up on Twitter with what you thought of Star Wars. And send us any questions of that you might have or your own crazy theories. All right, guys. I will catch you in a year when Rogue One comes out.
Good night, all.
All right, may the force be with you.
No, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about, like, Deadpool and stuff. Right? That's right around the corner.
Level up, friends.